T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony! Let's go. Yeah, nice little mix in the first hour of the show. We were able to talk some football, macro level. Then we did macro baseball free agency and then micro stuff with the Cubs. Now I want to talk about the NBA and try and figure out what the Knicks are doing. Turns out I know a really good NBA insider who knows all sorts of stuff. And I like to talk to him anyway because he's just good people. He's Vincent Goodwill, and he's the senior NBA writer for Yahoo. You know, he used to work for NBC Sports Chicago. He is always blaspheming about the Bulls, but I let it slide because he's got a lot of style and knows, like, everybody in the league. So I bring him onto the show now. What's up, sir?
What's going on, Lawrence? No time, no talk to, man.
I was watching you the other night. You were on a panel, and I was just like, look at Vinny up here just doing it. Just out here, just breaking down the league. And at that point, I said, I should probably get him on. And then when this whole thing happened with Porzingis, I said, I got to talk with Vincent about it. So I would love to know, well, when you were getting word about this deal going down, because I know people were telling you, what did you think?
Well, I had a feeling that Porzingis and the Knicks were headed toward a divorce. I wasn't sure it was going to be like today, or even right up into the trade deadline. But I was certainly of the mind that, you know, just because you're drafted by a franchise and that franchise goes through regime changes and everything else doesn't mean that those sour feelings still don't remain. I mean, we've seen certain things happen in Chicago and other areas where, you know, coaching change happens and, you know, player X who used to like coach Y doesn't like new coach and all sort of type of stuff. And sometimes they aren't necessarily given the benefit of the doubt. And with the Knicks going really big game hunting this summer, they couldn't afford to have a guy like Porzingis on board who was not going to be part of the program, who was not going to be fully endorsing, you know, their pursuits and everything else, because the Knicks don't have a good name around the league and they're trying to build that thing, you know, back up to where it's honestly where it's never been.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. The Knicks walk around like they are the premier franchise in the league, and they're nowhere close to that. Well, why are they allowed that level of arrogance as an organization and a fan base?
Well, have you ever been in New York?
I have.
Okay, so you should know arrogance is like a bound, right? But I will say this. Scott Perry, who I long believed, you know, deserved the chance to be running a franchise, you know, a big-name franchise, based off of his time, you know, in the college ranks, in the NBA ranks. He's not a part of this New York Knicks, you know, laughable situation that we've had to endure over the past couple of decades. He's coming in, and you can't change the past. But you can walk in aware of the past and try to change the future. And I think that's where he is, where he's trying to basically turn things around and saying, hey, James Dolan is James Dolan. The history is the history. Trust me. Trust what I'm doing with this franchise, and don't worry about some of those other things that I can't control. Honestly, that's the only way you can go about it if you're going to go to a team like the Knicks that have basically been a dumpster fire for the better part of 2 decades, and you're hoping to sell someone on New York City on some of the off-the-court opportunities while also showing him, hey, we can give you teammates. We can give you, you know what I'm saying, other opportunities, you know, saying on the floor with, you know, supporting cast that you can win with. Like, Chicago and New York are kind of two of those sleeping giants in terms of market size and tradition, quote unquote, and everything else, that when you got the right people running the franchise, if you have the right people running the franchise, you won't necessarily be that far away.
Okay.
Notice I said if you got the right people running the franchise.
I did, and I put it in my file for later, because I do want to ask you your opinion on the Bulls, but they're a secondary or tertiary topic to me in this discussion. I'm curious on what you think this does to the math inside the NBA, where Porzingis, who when healthy could play at a star level, now ends up in Dallas, and it opens up, you know, the two max slots for the Knicks, then and them dreaming, and then of course they're also trying for Zion, so maybe they end up with him. What does this change in your opinion?
Well, I think before they didn't have the salary cap space to truly make a run at two max free agents, two unrestricted max free agents with a certain amount of years of experience, which means your salary ceiling is a lot higher than maybe someone who's 5 years in the league or 6 years in the league. So it puts them in the strata of a Kevin Durant, of a Kyrie Irving. And I think that's very important, not just to have one slot, but to have two. So basically, I know people are against this whole what they call collusion, although I don't think this falls under the category of collusion. But if you want to sell yourself to a superstar, you can't just say, hey, come here and play with what we have. No, you're saying, hey, come here and you can bring someone with you. Whoever that may be, we have the cap space for it. And I think that's where some people get a little queasy as far as the NBA and everything else. But that's just the reality of it. These guys are talking to each other. They're having conversations. Olympic team, All-Star Weekend. It's not just AAU and all that other type of stuff coming. These guys are, you know, talking to each other throughout the year, and they want to win, and they want to play with like players. And whether you can say it's not with LeBron or you can say it's not with Kevin Durant and everything else, that's the state of the league now, and that's where you have to get to.
I wanted to talk to you about the power that LeBron uses, that he has created and is now using, and how you feel about that for player development and for league development. What does that say about where the power in the league is and how he has consolidated it?
Well, I will say this, and I know it's hard. For whatever reason, the NBA is that league where the labor force gets treated by the public en masse as if they are the employers. Normally, people side with employees over employers, correct?
Correct.
For whatever reason, in the NBA, and I'm sure me and you can sort of, if we dug a little bit, we could probably figure out why. For whatever reason in the NBA, people don't like the employees taking, you know, full advantage of whatever mechanism is available to them. LeBron James is the singular most important figure in sports free agency, not named Kurt Flood.
Wow.
If you think about it.
Wow.
You talk player empowerment, where you're talking, because everything else before 2010 was whoever offers you the most money wins. LeBron says, that's cool. I'm going to get my money my way, but I'm also going to pick where I want to go. I'm going to buck this system and all these mechanisms that you put in place to keep people like me where I am. And I'm also going to basically put myself in the best possible position to win, because the public en masse has put pressure on me, the star player, to win when I do not have control over plenty of other external factors. So I might as well stack the deck and control what I can control, because at the end of June, if I'm not holding the trophy, I'm getting killed for 3 months.
Is there any lesson here for other players in the NBA and other organizations? Can anyone else follow the LeBron model, or is it special to him because he is special?
It's special to him because he is special, but he's also empowered people around him. He's empowered Maverick Carter. He's empowered Rich Paul. But not just that, because plenty of people have empowered people around him, and hasn't always gone well, right? But these guys are educated. They're savvy. They understand the ins and outs. They're not just someone's boys. They're qualified, right? How many times have we seen someone try to play the part, but they don't understand the inner workings of a situation and winds up biting the player and themselves in the butt? So the fact that LeBron has chosen, quote unquote, his friends, but also made them equal partners in the world in which they inhabit, where they individually are going to be respected. That's the lesson that players, I think, are going to learn. Not that there's a Rich Paul or a Maverick Carter around, you know, every corner, but basically, here are the rules. If you're going to bring people alongside you, you know, here's the guardrails. Here's what you need to do. Maverick Carter, you know, was working with Nike under Lynn Merrick for several, you know, for years, you know, after he left Western Michigan from playing basketball because he knew he was running LeBron Inc. Rich Paul was working under Mark Termini, was working with CAA. If these are the things that you want to do, if you want to have a team and people around you, then you need to make sure that they're qualified and they're able to handle your business as opposed to just passing people on as credible figures.
Talking with Vincent Goodwill, who is the senior NBA writer for Yahoo. You can follow him on Twitter at Vince Goodwill. The reason that I asked you that question about LeBron is you know what happens every offseason in the NBA. Guys get huge money deals that are fully guaranteed, and the guys in the NFL go, oh, hell no. Like what's going on? I'm putting my body on the line. But for some reason, they're not able, whether it's the Basketball Players Association or even Baseball's Players Association, which I think is very strong as a unit, maybe not as strong individually as what LeBron can muster up in the NBA. I wonder if the NFL guys can take anything from the way LeBron has gamed the system and find some power in it.
Well, here's the thing. Unless it's a, you know, a black quarterback, basically, because that's the position of power in the NFL, is the quarterback position, is the position of leadership, basically. It's almost a position of management, if you think about it. You don't think of Drew Brees as a center. You think of Drew Brees and Sean Payton. You think of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. You know what I'm saying? You think of the star quarterback being conjoined with the head coach, and the head coach is in the NFL management, whereas in the NBA, he's more of a partner. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of where, you know, things get tricky. The problem with the NFL is there's just too many players to get on the same side with that, so there's not going to be a certain amount of players who have a certain amount of weight, you know, that are going to get on the same page. It's just, I just say the structure of it is completely different. Add to the fact that the career lifespans are shorter, these guys aren't going to strike, you know, for the benefit of the upper crust the way that the NBA went from having basically the middle class be the privileged class on the backs of the superstars. Now it's the superstars that are basically getting the supermaxes and all these other type of deals, where before the middle classes were getting overpaid. That sort of thing flipped. In the NFL, the structure is just so different because of so many players, Lawrence, and it's hard to get those guys on the same page. Different agendas, and the guaranteed contract thing, that's something that they got to go to the wall for. You got to be willing to lose a season for something like that. And I don't think players as a whole, NFL players who don't have guaranteed contracts, who know your career lifespan is what, 3.5 years maybe? You know what I'm saying? Like, you have a very limited time to maximize your earning potential on top of the damage that it's doing to your body. I don't know if the system is set up for that. These guys couldn't even rally around for Colin Kaepernick, who clearly deserved to be in the NFL, and a lot of guys didn't want to step up and say, you know what, this is wrong. So imagine how hard it's going to be for them to stand up for themselves and go to the wall for guaranteed contracts, you know what I'm saying, when it really, really matters. I don't know if I see that happening.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate the way that you are looking at this and your perspective on it. Now, let's talk about these Bulls.
And do we have to?
Yeah, I mean, the show's on in Chicago. We are now the Bulls flagship station.
There we go.
And honestly, like, I find myself at some intersection between sadness and straight up fury when it comes to talking about the Bulls. What I don't understand is why the Bulls as an organization continue to miss the mark on what winning basketball looks like. You've covered this league, you've covered this team, and you've covered this front office. What don't they get?
I don't know if it's a matter of what they don't get. I wonder if it's sort of like an antiquated way of thinking. And it's almost like the ghost of Michael Jordan has never left this franchise, where sometimes people feel like, not inflated, but that's we won like that back then, so we have to, you know what I'm saying, things like that. And because whenever something came up when I was there and we would ask, you know, Paxson or Gar Foreman about player X or player Y, inevitably the name Michael Jordan would come tumbling out of their mouths. And it was not a ill will, but that was like the portion that they were hanging up, like the photo on the wall. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if there is the foresight, if there is the creativity to for where the league is going. Sometimes you're building a team for where the league is. The great teams, the great organizations understand where the league is going. And where the Bulls fall into a trap is this league has changed so much from 2011. Like, it changed from 2011 to 2015. And it, now it's in a, another wholesale change where it's very hard to get ahead of the curve. I don't know if they have the creativity, not necessarily willing to use the resources that they have to do. And sometimes people are more intent on being right than they are about getting it right. And I don't know if, you know, what Jim Boylan's thought is about, you know, how he perceives the game of basketball should be played and how players should think and react. But that ain't necessarily the world that he's living in. And I feel like that people are stuck in a time warp and need to figure out where the league is going and not some idealistic view of where the league should be.
I'm with you on that wholeheartedly. I watching Jim Boylan, I don't even know if I should be as angry as I am about watching him, but it seems as if he is parroting some lines that he is hearing from the front office or maybe even ownership, who knows, about how the game should be played. And it's almost like they're not paying attention to what is happening around them and around the NBA.
Well, when he said, you know, I forgot the line, but I forgot who asked the question about, you know, the free agents coming to Chicago. And he said something along the lines of, well, you know, if guys don't want to play this way or something like that, then we don't want them. Yeah, that's exactly what marquee players want to hear, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
The lack of foresight is it's problematic. And it's problematic for a fan base that, yes, still goes to games, still enjoy. And I like to separate this, Vinny. I really do, because I think the in-game product – that the Bulls put out outside of them playing is good. I think that they're the way that they market the league and maybe not even their team, everything that goes on around the Bulls except for the basketball is top notch. So I don't understand why it's not expected that the basketball would have to match with everything else about their organization.
Well, Here's the thing, and here's where people who may be having to make these decisions have a hard time figuring it out. You look at the trade for Jimmy Butler, the trade of Jimmy Butler, right? You look at what you got back in return. Zach LaVine, productive player. Lauri Markkanen, productive player. Chris Dunn, question mark. But 2 out of 3, cool, right? You draft Wendell Carter Jr. You drafted Chandler Hutchinson. None of those individual moves in a vacuum are bad moves, right? The problem that comes with it isn't individual moves. The problem is team building. The problem is what direction are we going? Are we truly, truly, if we're all the way rebuilding, how long do we have to be quote-unquote bad? If you're saying this is going to be an elongated process, all right, cool. But when you go and fire Fred Hoiberg, you know, very early in the season, it looks like that was premeditated. And it also looks like the person that you're supposed to be bringing in is supposed to be fostering some level of improvement and player development. I have seen neither. I don't think anybody expected this team to be a playoff team. Nobody with common sense. Young teams don't win. Young teams don't play defense. Those are basically two hallmarks of this Bulls team now. But what you're not seeing is a cohesion, a togetherness, a sense of these guys being on a string, and not just on the floor, but also in the front office. And they can say, look, we're only a year and a half into this, but you would expect to see some level of progress and direction. And I don't think they inspire that.
With Pax in particular, it's not as if he doesn't have contemporaries that he can look at around the league, guys that he played in the league with that are having success with a different point of view than this kind of hard line. We have to live up to the ideal of, well, we play defense and that's what it has to be about. I don't understand why he's not able to look at what Danny Ainge has put together in Boston or what Steve Kerr has become in Golden State, just to name a couple, and say maybe they have a better idea of what works in the NBA in 2019 than I do.
Well, I think once again, Danny Ainge is certainly an outlier because he's taking people to the cleaners, all right? Like, between Danny Ainge and Juanita Jordan, I don't know who I'd rather see across the way from me because I feel like I'm going to get taken. All right? So between that, I think is a little bit of a different type of bird. But when you're talking about Pax, and I do think that Pax, A, he means well, which does, I don't know if that says a lot, but he does have a level of equity in the franchise. And I do believe that if he feels like he couldn't turn around, I do believe that he would take a step back or a step down or whatever the case may be. I believe he has that much pride into it. The problem is there's been so much damage done publicly, whether it's the Fred Hoiberg stuff, the Tom Thibodeau stuff. You've been at it for 15 years and you have five playoff series wins. I think the lack of trust is honestly more so about the mistakes of the past than it actually is about what you're seeing right now. Don't get me wrong. What you're seeing right now ain't good. It ain't inspiring. But when you're a year and a half into it, there can only be so much expectation. You know what I'm saying? There can only be, you know, so much that you can expect as a fan base and even as a media. The problem is there is no trust there between what appears to be the front office and the public, be it that's the fans, be it that's the media. There isn't much there. So everything is going to be looked at and be more scrutinized because there is no trust.
Vincent, I really appreciate your time. I know you got to get back to writing. Thanks so much for joining me, and thanks for a terrific basketball conversation.
All good, man. I'm glad a member of the Light Skin Brotherhood decided to call.
Oh, okay. I think there's just me, though. Like, I think I'm it.
Yeah, you might be the last one.
I think I'm it. I'm out here like Christopher Williams before the trial.
Kareem Akbar?
Yeah, the educated brother from the bank.
That's right, man.
He was, you know, man. Christopher Williams was just at Promontory like a few weeks
really?
Ago.
Really?
Yes.
Did you go? Does he still look like Christopher Williams, or does he look like, you know, Christopher Williams' older uncle?
Yeah, he's definitely looking like Christopher Williams' older uncle at this point. It's been a rough road. You know, Stacey Dash done put him through some stuff.
Well, see when you're dark skinned like us. We don't really crack. But you got to worry about that with us.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm saying that he wouldn't have cracked if he'd been living right. If he'd been fine. I think Albie Shore is still looking all right. I think.
Y'all light skins. Y'all live high off the hog for a little too long. Y'all don't realize it's going to be on the other end. And you're going to get in all this trouble talking about light skin, dark skin stuff on the radio.
Dude, I talk about, well, the people who get it, and the people who don't. And I talk about colorism all the time, and I think that it's okay to every now and again allow the public into some of our family conversations.
And I'm gonna my mentions are gonna be blown up full of light skinned dudes mad.
Yeah,
in their feelings.
Yeah, like Drake. Yeah.
Yep.
There's no doubt about it. Vincent, I'll talk to you, man. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, no problem. See you soon.
Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo. Doesn't seem to mind those light-skinned women getting older, though. Tell you that much. No problem there. Hey, speaking of which, have you seen Rachel True? You know Rachel True, like, 52 years old. She was on Twitter the other day, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, she still looks like new money. She was also talking about, you know, being biracial and how there are people who don't think she's black enough, but I mean, just look at the first video that pops up of her. She still looks like Mary Jane. It's like, what? Like, what type of sorcery is this? Have you checked it out yet, Herb?
The video, no. But I do like me some Rachel True.
I know. I'm just go to her Twitter account. Like, there's a video that like is at the top of her Twitter account, and I'm pretty sure that she's like 52 years old. And you're like, wait, who's Rachel True? Dave Chappelle's girlfriend from Half Baked.
Or Chris Rock's girlfriend from CB4.
Correct. Yeah, she's 52 and looks like that still. It's amazing. I'm striving for that. Better start eating right and drinking more water. Be out here like Tony. Tony will learn eating them Whoppers. He gonna learn today. There's another thought on the Bulls front office, and then I'm gonna leave it alone for the rest of the show. But I'm gonna share this with you because it was a great conversation with Joe Cowley. And just like a couple minutes of some of his harsh criticism of the Bulls. Because I know you like it. Back after this on The Score. Takes a little while to get there, Tony. Maybe you want to start there. Next time.
I literally told him that.
The build up, though. Like, if you listen to the song, you'll get why I did that.
All right,
the build up is crazy.
Stop it. Stop it. No, don't fade it. Stop it. All right. Now I want you to play it again and listen to it as a music bump. All right. How long it takes to get to the break beat. Go for it. It's 15 seconds, Tony, and then a second of dead air before we actually get to the beat that you want.
Damn kids.
Oh, my God. Bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this Monday, February 4th, when they host Penn State at 7 p.m. Limited tickets remain. Buy now at nusports.com. Thanks to the people over at the Jam at WCIU. I had the pleasure of hosting over there for the last two mornings. I'm a little tired, and I'm definitely looking forward to, one, getting my wife back, because she's been trapped, air quotes, in San Diego since last Friday. White Panther was supposed to come home on Monday, but, you know, There was no way. I don't know if planes could even fly in the type of air that was out there for you. So she spent a couple extra days there. All right, was she supposed to come back Sunday? I think it was Sunday. So she had to spend three extra days in San Diego. Oh, poor baby. Meanwhile, I'm back here holding down the homestead by myself. It's been terrible. You're probably doing the same thing. You're out there shoveling in shifts. Is it snowing again? Seriously? But you know, I looked at the forecast. Have you looked at the forecast, Herbie?
I did.
Man.
We're good.
First of all, I was just happy when I was driving in today that my car thermometer said above freezing. So we're above freezing. But, of course, we got above freezing, and we got above zero. I'm sorry, not above freezing. Above zero, and it starts snowing again.
But yeah, if you're home now, you're good. Tomorrow's going to be like 20, and then like, what, Saturday's going to be 40, Sunday's going to be 45.
And Monday's going to be 50.
Let's go.
So all that stuff is going to hopefully wash away by Monday, and then it's going to snow again on Tuesday. I mean, we were due for it, right? Like, we had been kind of skating this winter where it was like, oh, it was kind of nice. Like, you wearing jackets and stuff outside.
Like, last couple winters. Yeah. I don't remember, like, a giant, like, issue.
Yeah, and, like, I get it. Oh, Chicago, you got me. This is apocalyptic type stuff, man. This isn't it's cold. You know what? It's cold now. Like, this is normal cold. Man, it's kind of cold outside. Oh, maybe that wind chill maybe dips into the negative numbers. When you're talking about walking out the house, I was laughing because it was so miserable. I get in the car to go host the jam over on WCIU. And in the garage, it was like, oh, it's, you know, 22 degrees. And I was like, oh, what's everyone crying about? It's not that bad. By the time that I got to the first stoplight on my, it was like minus 15. Air temperature. Thank God for the heated seats. You know, there comes a point in a man's life, and Tony, one day you'll get here, where luxury matters. And I know I sound like a commercial, but damn it, after having a car that had it had heated seats and a heated steering wheel, I then got a car that had neither. And after one winter of dealing with that, I was like, my tushy needs to be warm. I don't care what you say about me, as Bernie Mac would say. My tushy needed to be warm. And I will tell you now, I would rather have seat warmers than actual heat in the car. That's how much my tushy needs to be warm.
I stepped outside Wednesday, and I did it just, oh, I'll just run outside, start the car, and come back in the house. I couldn't breathe.
Yeah, it's bad. I saw people running, like not running to get inside, but out running. And I was like, what are you doing? At some point, that becomes bad for your lungs. Stop doing that. Stop running outside.
Oh, I took an Uber in this morning to my other job, which they conveniently forgot to tell me that
it was closed.
So I took an Uber from my house to the train, and the guy had no heat in his car. So basically all the windows are frozen, and he's got this little rag on the side and wiping so he can see out of the window, so, and he'll do it every couple of seconds because he couldn't see.
So it's like the Blues Brothers? You don't know that reference. Never mind.
One star, though, right?
No stars for that.
I think I still give him five.
Come on, Tony.
I give out five stars. If you get me to my destination safely, you get five stars.
All right. I've made the people wait long enough for this joke clip. But I'm just telling you, if you ever get to the point where you do have a car with seat warmers, don't give it up. Try to make sure the next car has a steering wheel warmer. But I'll never go back to lower than a seat warmer ever again. Ever. Joe Cali was on the show. We had a nice conversation about the Bulls. And, you know, Joe's got an edge. It's one of the reasons why I really like him. I think you need guys to push the limits occasionally. And Joe does that. We talked about a ton of stuff, but I thought where he was really pulling out the hammer was when we started talking about Jabari Parker. Take a listen.
That is the anchor in all of this. I mean, look, what Jabari's done since he got here, and the way he's treated the media, especially early on, that's on Jabari. But the fact that he was brought here and given that amount of money, that's not his fault. That comes from a scouting department that obviously missed what the rest of the entire NBA saw. A guy who wasn't going to play defense, a guy who's not a great three-point shooter, a guy who can, you know, he can score, he can get you 15 to 20, and probably do so falling out of bed. He's just one of those guys that's a natural scorer. But as far as everything else and everything this team still needed, disastrous decision. And yeah, you needed to fill that space. There was a lot of guys out there. There's multiple. You could have gotten two guys that would have been better leaders and maybe been better for this team than the one for $20 million. So, look, Jabari, here's my problem with Jabari. You came here like you were the second coming, and we all owed you something. That's fine. This was the city that kissed your ass growing up and kissed your ass as a high schooler going off to Duke. And that's fine. That's what this city does with some of its basketball players. But then your attitude towards the media was so disrespectful and so I don't need you that a couple of us just decided, you know what, we don't need you, and stop talking to them. Well, all of a sudden, when things aren't going right, Then all of a sudden you're reaching out to the media and want to talk about your car collection, and all of a sudden you want to open up and put together sentences of more than two or three words. Come on, bro. No, now we don't need you. You needed us. And so I refuse to get caught up in that game at this point in my career with a guy who spit at us and all of a sudden wanted to wipe that spit off and put his arm around us. Nah, that's not happening.
We need to isolate the, come on, bruh.
Like that come needs, on, bruh. No.
Yeah, perfect. Way to go. We already have it?
Come on, bruh. No.
I think we need to cut it to come on, bruh. And then, like, boost it. It should be his own thing. Let me hear it one more time, Tony.
Come on, bruh. No.
I think we need to cut it to come on, bruh. Because the no sounds like it sounds too quick. But I just love that the Joe that you get, other than the swear words that you get going at a game, is the same dude that he is on the radio. And I
come
really,
on, bro. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And I respect that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, there's something else that I want you to hear. This time it has to do with someone here and a conversation that I had on my podcast. I'll explain next here on The Score. The Super Bowl and Super Bowl coverage on The Score is presented by Sprint. Sprint, brighter future for all. We're going to talk with Hub Arkish at 9 o'clock, who's in Atlanta at Super Bowl 53, about the NFL and about the matchup and all sorts of other stuff. I thought I would share this because it's been a question that people have asked. You know, last year there was a little trade, a little switcheroo, where Zach Zateman went to the Cubs booth and Mark Grody went to the sidelines to go cover the Bears. I think it's worked out. I think Zach is in his element, and I love when he does play-by-play in the fifth inning. I've had the honor of doing play-by-play broadcasts with that guy, and I can tell you that no one's more prepared than him. There might be people who come close, but no one's more prepared than Zach. And Grody kind of found himself in the Bears beat, and I thought that his personality really lends to some fantastic coverage of the Bears in a different way. And then the way that I did it or the way that Zach did it, and it's cool, but I do know there are people like, well, wait, why did this happen? So I do this podcast. It's called House of L. And I'm going to provide a link to the entire conversation on my Twitter account, at Lawrence W. Holmes, because the episode is so good. It's so good. Me and Grody sat down for a little over an hour and talked about all sorts of stuff. And a lot of stuff that I think could be helpful to other people. But I'll leave you to discover what I mean by that. But I thought something that you might find interesting is the mechanism of him coming to cover the Bears and what that was like for a guy that spent a majority of his time covering the Cubs. So here's a portion of the conversation that we had.
I was able to compartmentalize it by realizing that they didn't send me to Siberia, that they handed me another great job, that covering the Bears, you know, Bears and Cubs in this town are the two huge beats. And getting to be a part of not just covering the Bears, but being part of that organization or being part of our organization, but in an intimate way with the Bears as the sideline reporter and all that kind of stuff. So to me, I realized that it was a great job and that you better do this job really well, because it is an incredibly important beat in this town that people take very seriously and everybody cares about, because we're divided in a lot of ways in this city as far as sports are concerned, but everybody seems to love the Bears. So I took it that seriously. I wanted to be great at what I did. you know, Joniak and Thayer and the rest of the crew were great because, you know, they knew I was a veteran reporter. It wasn't like I was some, you know, rookie, you know, who's never been around a clubhouse. And they kind of treated me as such. Like Joniak, who was basically in charge of that broadcast, gave me tons of autonomy in terms of, you know, I do 2, 3, 4 interviews for our pregame show. And he was like, I trust you to find the good angles to decide, you know, who'd you get? You know, I don't think there was, you know, I think he used just about everything that I put out there. So I love the job. And here's another part too, Lawrence, that I got to be more a part of the score. Here's another reason I love the job was like with the Cubs, you're kind of in your own Cubs world. And
correct.
That ship just sort of sails with Ron and Coombe and now with Zach. Like they're all, you know, there's very little. Not that you'll have Zach on every once in a while.
I haven't seen Zach in months.
Right. Yeah, you're with the Cubs. You're not really with the score, even though it's on the score. So I think people know what I'm saying when I say that. With the Bears, it's like I am a reporter. I'm a sideline reporter. So I am here, you know, going on the shows, whether it's in studio or on the phone. And I love that. I love that interaction, getting to flex a little bit of personality, being able to bring some news and being that guy. I'd forgotten how much I loved that part of it. So that's just one of many reasons why I love the job, just getting to be feeling like I was more part of the score again.
What was the moment as you're transitioning where you're like, okay, I think I got it now? Because there's a transition period of you're like, you spent your last few years covering baseball, and now it's like you're covering football, but it's different. It's different than Mark Grody, the update guy.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about the Bears, or even Mark Grody, the talk show host, talking about the Bears. You now become the authority on the Bears. So when was the moment where you were able to take a deep breath and go, I got this?
I don't know if there was that moment, because I don't even know if I got this yet. You know what I mean? Like there was so many, like, let's just say as a sideline reporter, I was given some general ideas on how to do the job, but for the most part, it was like, go do it, go find what you think is interesting. And I just remember, like, maybe 4 or 5 games into the season, I think I started to get a better rhythm of what was important and what was not. You know what I mean? Like, beginning, like, for instance, like in the preseason, like what I always do, I'd be like, oh man, the coaches are gathering around with Mitch Trubisky and they're all looking at the iPad and they're, you know, they're really going at it over there in terms of the coaching and the instruction. Then I realized that happens all the time. So what I was saying was, you know, while they didn't reject my reports, maybe it wasn't that, to me anyway. After a while, I'm like, you know what? This happens a lot. So maybe I need to stop reporting on that and try to find more interesting things to report on. As far as like the locker room thing, that's a entire process. Maybe week 13 or 14 was when I started to where the players really started to trust me. Because you know how that is. I mean, they got to trust you. They got to see you. They got to see you. And they saw me enough to that point where you start to get that, you know, where I say hi to a player. I'll be like, you know, hi, Akeem. And then it's, hey, what's going on, Mark? And then you're like, oh, you finally know my name, or you finally will say my name, and you're a little bit surprised by it. So, yeah, it took me all year to figure this job out and to start to get connections. And then I can't wait till next year because it's the next level. Then now I go into it knowing these players and they know me. So I'll start to get even better at the job in a year that I thought I did okay.
That was Mark Grody. He was on the House of L podcast. That's my podcast. You can search for it on Google Play Music, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on iTunes. The conversation was great. And we talked a lot about like what covering the Bears means and his time covering the Cubs too. But then we got into some really personal stuff. If you're on Twitter, I just shared a link and you can listen to the whole thing. And I highly recommend that you do. And if you're not on Twitter, just search House of L, like L, the letter that starts my name. House of L podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. And check out, there's a lot of great episodes, a lot of good people in the media world here in Chicago that I've interviewed for the podcast that you might find interesting. You know, great conversations with Kelly Krull or Sarah Spain, Jason Goff, Barry Rosner, a lot of cool people. But the Grody episode is the latest one, And I think that it's valuable because of some of the really serious conversations that he and I ended up having. And I will tell you, I'll just give away this little secret. I had no idea that Grody was a stand-up comedian. Like, I always knew he was funny. And we spent a lot of time, laughing. It's probably the most I've ever laughed in an episode of House of Hell. But I didn't know that he actually was on a stage doing stand-up and is thinking about doing it again. I thought it was really, really cool. Really cool. This texter says, I don't buy it. I bet Grody is more like Walter White saying, say my name. No, he's not that dude. I think that he's got a personality that lends itself to covering a locker room well. That people, like, he's one of those people that you just like. Got a nice, trustworthy face. As long as he doesn't burn anybody, he should be good to go for a long time at that gig. It's a good gig to have. It's like covering City Hall. It's the sports equivalent of covering City Hall. And when the Bears are good, man, it's a lot of fun to cover the Bears. People want to know what you think. Now Grody has that opportunity. I'm sure he's probably already bothered by it. Folks just walking up to him. What are the Bears going to do? He's like, I don't know. And he doesn't, because no one knows. Except for Hub. Hub knows. I'm going to talk some football with Hub Arkish. He is in Atlanta. He has been covering the Super Bowl. So I want to talk with him about some of the stuff that was said, whether it was Roger Goodell talking about the Saints, or was Sean Payton wearing a Roger Goodell clown shirt? That's epic. See, they're trying, like, the NFL's trying to get on that NBA level of petty, but they can't because everyone's so serious. And we have to keep all our secrets. I'll talk with Hub about that next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.